Welcome today to Compiler Construction. Last time we were having a look at bottom-up syntax analysis with the LR0 parser. So there has been a lot of construction and theoretical overhead as a main topic for last time. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to ask questions before we start elaborating on the things that we have done last time and improving the expressivity of the approach. So there's no question on the topic so far. Well, then let's dive deeper into the matter. So with the LR0 parser, maybe to help you remember what that bugger really was, here we have an example of an LR0 canonical automaton for an easy grammar. So you had a beast that was consisting of states that comprised several so-called items. Items are these grammar rules with a marker, and these weren't purely randomly distributed. Those were items that were created by expanding other items that have been initially there, depending on which of the non-terminals had been marked. Okay, so much for kind of repetition. This was meant to be, or is meant to be, an automaton that helps the shift-reduce automaton decide whether to actually shift or to reduce, and if it decides to reduce, then what reduction should actually be performed. The idea would be, in the naive case, to run the canonical automaton, this thing here, on the content of the push down of the shift reduce parser, which contains, at least in the naive version, terminals and non-terminals created by the shifts and reducers of the shift reduce automaton. So by kind of trying to reconsider what has been left from former computations, the canonical LR0 automaton is here to provide us with a set of items that represent feasible ideas of where we actually find ourselves within the deduction tree of a particular input. Or, well, if you take it as a deduction, you would take it as the output, but that's maybe, let's ignore that for a moment. So the things that you find inside of a state, so when the automaton terminates in a particular state, you can look up a number of items that tell you via the marker conceptually where you would consider yourself to be in right now in terms of processing right-hand sides of the items that you find in there. And the key idea is that everything boils down to you finding yourselves within a state where you, for example, realize that there is a so-called completed item, which means an item that has the marker on the right-hand side, which would be also the only item in there, which means that you definitely have reached a spot where reduction is the way to go instead of shifting. Contrarily, there's also the possibility for something else. You could find yourselves in a non-final state, like Q8, and that's... Is it Q8? Yes, Q8. Where all the items that you find in there have the marker not at the end, which means they are not completed yet, which means that there's absolutely no point in reducing at that moment. Instead, all we can do is shift. So this is the kind of dream situation for an LR0 parser, because with that now we can decide whether to shift or to reduce. So that is the purpose of that thing. Then we have discussed a little bit of optimization, meaning that we would migrate from a parser model that would explicitly keep the non-terminals and terminals on the pushdown, but instead what we would do is we would repeat, instead of repeatedly executing the LR0 automaton on the parser's pushdown, we would instead actually use the pushdown in order to save a trace through the characteristic or canonical, in this case, automaton, in order to backtrack as soon as we have arrived at a position where we would reduce, to continue the work with another branch. So that was kind of the optimization, which would get rid of all these multiple runs of the canonical automaton on the pushdown. Instead, it would be quasi linear in that sense. Not exactly, but a step in that direction. That was the state of last time's lecture. So now, there's a little bit of a caveat, particularly as I've drawn you boxes around two particular states which were ideal situations for LR0 parsing, particularly ones where there was only one completed item, meaning the parser would say, please reduce. And another item, and another state where there were items that were not completed, which would mean shift. Unfortunately, that is not the general case. The general case is that we can have arbitrary mixtures of items in these states. For example, if you look, well, you could look back, but you can also believe me that these are real states. For example, Q9 here, which is composed not of purely of just one singular completed item, but there is a completed item and an incomplete item. So what does that mean with respect to the original shift-reduce automaton? Well, unfortunately, you can't really decide anymore what to do at that point, because the hint that the canonical automaton gives to the shift-reduce parser is, well, you should reduce with this thing over here, but you should also shift with the other. Well, that is ambiguous, and thus the concept of this LR0 parser might still be ambiguous for certain grammars. There are grammars out there for LR0 parsers that work perfectly fine, that only create states of either non-completed items or singular completed items. These are the optimal case, of course, and you can just work without any other worries with them. However, LR0 parsing is still stronger than something like LL0 parsing, for example. If you paid attention to the tutorial, LL0 parsing is just, well, reading constants or, well, infinite strings or something. So that is just not very expressive in that sense. With an LR0 grammar, you can express even, a lot more. There is still variation in there. So as soon you can still decide a lot of the alternative productions of grammars with that. But still, it's on the weak side of expressivity. So we would clearly like to see more expressiveness in LR parsing. So, that is the formal construction of the LR0 parser. I probably should have swapped both slides around. So before we come to the next concept, that is once again the formalized version of the optimized LR parser that we have sketched in these colorful boxes a few slides ago. That is the version of the parser which doesn't have any terminals or non-terminal symbols on the pushdown anymore, but instead it pushes states of the canonical automaton. Yeah, so that's what we see sketched over here. So our states are now not items. Not symbols anymore, but instead they are states of the canonical automaton, thus states from Q. The start state is also the start state of the canonical automaton, and final state is something arbitrary fresh. So, for transitions in the LR0 parser, there's shifts and reduce as they have been in the original version, but this time they work a little bit differently because our stack alphabet has changed. It's states of the canonical automaton now. So what happens usually is that there is for shifts, for example, this means that we find a particular state of the canonical automaton on top of the pushdown. We take it and do the transition in the canonical automaton, which will yield us the target state with respect to the canonical automaton. And that is a thing that we have to conserve because we might have to undo and go another branch later on. So that's why we put it on the pushdown for later. Okay? Thus, we never find any terminals anymore on the pushdown, of course. Then there's the reduces. And when do we actually reduce? Well, we do that in case that we find that in the topmost state of the pushdown, which is a canonical automaton state, we find that the state contains a completed item. That was our condition for a final state of the canonical automaton. If we find something like that, what we do is, well, this means that we have found that the original automaton needs to do a reduction, and all the pieces that are still left on the automaton are just variations of this A goes to X1 to XM with the dot shifted by one piece by piece. So these are all a chain that is completed now with a completed item. We can collapse and move away from the pushdown. So that's what we do. The Q1 to QM, which correspond to as many states as there is symbols on the right-hand side of the closed item, can go away and be replaced with something different. Particularly, we have realized that we can reduce to an A in this context. So what we do is now we go back in the canonical automaton until we reach the state from which we unfolded this A and shift the bullet by one, because now we have collapsed this A because we have fully matched that with the input. So that's what we do. We remove all the states that were belonging to processing this particular unfolding and look up in the transition table of the canonical automaton where what we can reach by going not this chain of former symbols that has been specified by X1 to XM, but with the left-hand side symbol now, with this QA. Thus, we reach a new state, which we then push on the pushdown and continue our usual work. So that maybe clarifies a little bit what the optimization is actually all about. We migrate from a symbol-centric pushdown automaton to a state-based automaton. Okay, good. So, yeah, that's what the LR0 parser now is. So, after this now... yeah, there's still correctness, but I will spare you that. What we've talked about also is the the thing that we have encountered certain states that make a run of the LR0 automaton not successful because there's no unique guideline given by the canonical automaton anymore. These situations have specific names. Particularly, they are conflicts of certain kinds. There's, for example, the situation that you find yourself not in a final state with only one completed item, but maybe several of those. And in this case, well, although you know you have to reduce, you don't know with which production you need to reduce. So this would be a reduce conflict. You can see them if you inspect such a state and find two completed items in there. If that, or even more, if that is the case, you have a reduce conflict between each pair of completed items. So there's nothing too fancy about that, just completed items in there. The other possibility that you might run into is the so-called shift-reduce conflict. This is the situation where the final state gives you advice, well, you should shift and you should reduce. Meaning that there is a completed item found in the final state as well as a state of the following form, where you have an item of the following form, where you have the marker in front of a, well, it seems to be a terminal symbol. Then they are said to be shift and shift reduce conflict. Maybe to get you a little bit into thinking, well, I could have a state where I find a completed item and an incompleted item where the marker is in front of a non-terminal. But the definition says that shift-reduced conflict is only when the marker of the non-completed item is in front of a terminal. Is that okay then? Why is it that the marker needs to be in front of the terminal in case of the incompleted item? Is there any reason to that? No, empty is not considered to be a terminal symbol. So this is a fresh symbol separated from the thing. So this would always mean that there is an actual terminal there. What is with the terminal?
If it was like in front of beta, could beta be like empty?
Beta could be empty, that would be fine.
But if it's not empty, it can be gone and then it would be the last.
Yeah, but it's still not completed then. Because it's still the A there, so that's still fine. So maybe add a little bit to that. That would be some A prime goes to some gamma marker in front of a B, for example. And whatever you might want to find after. So is there a reason why this is... Is that fine if you find something like that in there? Because it clearly says only between markup in front of terminal. If you what? A new?
If you, for example, replace a B with something.
With what would you propose to replace it? I think it's just a matter of wording what you want to say, but you're already on the right track. So I'm just teasing you. So the thing is, of course, you could have such a thing in a state, but that would also mean that the closure is not fully done. Of course, this would mean that also something like B goes to something else would have to be found within the thing, and so on, until at one point you reach an item that has either finally a T, some terminal symbol T there, or some empty right-hand side with just the bullet. Either way, you run either into a reduce-reduce conflict of the former definition, or into a shift-reduce conflict, but not with this thing, but between those. And this is far more helpful, because that is actually pinpointing where the actual conflict comes from. So, yeah. That's the background. So that's why you usually consider only the marker in front of a T as being part of the shift-reduce conflict. Okay, anyway. It will lead to a shift-reduce conflict either way at some point, or maybe also in a reduce-reduce conflict, but it will lead into a conflict. You can't just say at that point which one it will be. Because it might actually turn out to be a reduce-reduce conflict and not a shift-reduce conflict. If you, for example, go in this direction. So if the grammar turns out to rewrite to an empty right-hand side, for example, you get a closed item, and then it's a reduce-reduce conflict. So would be too eager to specify that thing as a shift-reduce thing. Okay. So in order to get rid of such a thing as the LR0 unsuited states, we take a look again at the derivation tree and the pushdown content at that point, because the pushdown content was the thing that we analyzed for guidance with a canonical automaton. And, well, for example, this would be a conflict situation. We have a T on the pushdown. This is the state in the imaginary derivation tree. And we have a production that reduces T to E, and a reduction that would reduce T and a little bit more to another T. So the question is, why did we go to T? And weighted by, why did we shift and not directly reduce? That's what I sketch you with these question marks over there. So, what gave us the clue? Or what gave it away in that sense? So, well, the other situation would, for example, be this one over here, where we find a T on the pushdown, and this time our derivation tree would only work out to be one when we directly reduce to E and not shift the next symbol. We could also have kind of tried to combine it with the next symbol and try to come out with a T, for example. But here you already see a little bit what the problem would actually be, because if you look a little bit harder, you see that there's also an arrow from the next symbol, which we would intend to shift if we didn't reduce, and combine into the other solution. However, there is no right-hand side that expands T with a T and a plus symbol. So the another criteria which would help us in identifying a suitable reduce or shift advice would be not only to take the pure content of the pushdown into account, but also what potentially could be shifted next. Because that might indicate us whether that would be it would be a good idea to go either way. So, and it turns out, if we re-inspect the situation from before and see, well, pushdown, of course, has a T. It's ambiguous. We don't know what to do with that. But the input, the first symbol, is a multiplication operator. Also over here. So we can now now start bringing that into the equation. And, yeah, what do we learn by that? For example, that a T exists in the right-hand side with a multiplication operator as a direct neighbor. So there is a right context for the T that has the operator as first symbol. And this is with respect to later on reducing the content to T, but not in the context of the singular T being reduced to E at some point, because, well, there is no such situation, is there? Well, yeah, because in the right context for E, for example, you would always get a addition operator, some summation thing. So, yeah, this star, this right context being a star, is a good indicator for what to do in our case. Same thing goes for the other point where we decided to, well, in our case it was a pure reduction. There we had a T, but in the input we found there would be a plus operator. Shifting would never lead us to a right-hand side that would do any good in our case. Because the only way that that would work would be that there would be a addition operator in this right-hand side of a T, and that does not work out. Instead, reducing T to E would give us the opportunity of checking the right context of E, which would turn out to be here, with where we find that the addition operator is a viable choice here. So, plus is a good hint for performing the direct reduction instead of a shift action at that point. So in both of the cases that we have looked at so far, just looking at the next input symbol already gave us enough information of what we should actually do in these cases. So that is kind of the concept of how to go on from the LR0 automaton, switching over to the LR1 parser and LR1 automaton. Meaning that we, same thing as with LL parsing, we take the next K symbols into account for deciding what to do. In our case, the next symbol, which is K is 1. In our case, but there's also, of course, concepts where K is larger. So, yeah. For that, we introduce now also a concept of how to name the grammars that are suitable for that kind of concept, and that would be the LRK grammars. So, if we find ourselves confronted with a context-free grammar that fulfills certain properties, being reduced, which means that we have gotten rid of unproductive and unreachable productions, for example. But anyway, if we find ourselves a context-free grammar, we can call it an LRK grammar. If it turns out that if we go and do write derivations with the productions of that grammar and reach a certain sentence form like that, sentence forms, always a combination of terminals and non-terminals, we can observe several things. First of all, in a right derivation, we always have a suffix of purely terminal symbols, well, except for having done nothing at all. But usually you can find at some point a suffix developing which is already finalized, cannot be rewritten anymore with right derivations because you have reached a terminal symbol at some point. So this is the W component of the syntax form. And then there's parts alpha and beta that are arbitrary combinations of terminals and non-terminals. These are fragments of not yet completely fully derived parts of the derivation tree that still need to be brought into connection with the input. So these are things that are unfinished business and need to be addressed later on. So if you look at such a syntax form, this is in the middle of computing a derivation. And this means that the thing that you have looked at that moment, this alpha, beta, omega, will have been created by some other syntax form where this beta was a right-hand side of a production and the A was left-hand side of a production. So this is kind of the last step that you did during right derivation. Okay? So remember always in that part of the graphic we're talking about the last step in the derivation process. The alpha then is something we can't really fix right now to some specific form because that is completely dependent on what the grammar looks like and might be non-terminals and terminals. Doesn't matter anyway. Important is just this last derivation part where the A goes to beta, which is the last step of this derivation here. So, fixing this syntax form here in the first line means that, well, an LRK or a grammar is an LRK grammar when for all the possible such syntax forms, you take the first of all this alpha beta, so the whatever is yielded by the complete part of alpha beta plus a bounded number of terminals from the still to be matched, well, or already produced output. W, and if you then compare that with all the other derivations that you can do and look at at the situations there in the last step of derivation, if it turns out that taking the same number of symbols from the generated output as before, so it's still number of symbols of A and B plus a bounded number of symbols from W, then if they are the same, then the grammar is only an LRK grammar if this derivation together with all the derivations before actually are no different from the derivation that you have looked at before. So there is not allowed a different derivation that yields the same output for the alpha beta part as well as the same output for the first k symbols of the remaining input. Of course, if there would be a different derivation with the same output, then you could not decide about what the appropriate reduction had to be in order to come up with a unique derivation tree. So if they are not the same, then there's two derivation trees that would be viable when seeing the first k symbols of the remaining input. And that is a no-go. Okay? You might have to let that one sink in a little bit, but I can help you with that by giving you a few examples of how to apply that for a particular purpose, and that would be to give you a strategy for checking whether the LRK property holds for certain grammars or not, meaning a strategy for testing whether a grammar can be put into an LRK parser or not. In order to do that, what you need to concentrate on is enumerating all possible rightmost derivations. That sounds really amazing, doesn't it? Enumerating all possible derivations. Well, you probably need to work a little bit with summarizing them by free variables or something in the exponent, or otherwise, you, in most cases, you won't succeed in writing them down. But yeah, we'll see later on how that goes. But in principle, what you need to do is list all possible derivations and keeping track of what the last step of derivation actually was in order to be able to tell what the better part of the syntax form actually is, because we need that in order to fix this alpha beta, to double check with other derivations. So anyway, yeah, you need to remember which part was replaced last. Then what you do is you iterate over the number of input symbols that you would like to grant the parser for parsing. So you start with a zero to check whether a grammar is LR0. If that doesn't suffice, you enlarge to LR1, check again. If that doesn't suffice, you enlarge to 2, and so on. So you iterate over the size of the look-ahead window. And then what you do is you pick all the possible derivations that you found and determine this sequence of first of length alpha beta plus k, and check if there exists another right derivation which has the exact same string of symbols. And if that is the case, and it has, if it has indeed been another derivation, then you have found your counterexample for this grammar to be of LR of the current k, and you have to iterate to the next larger k. Okay? So that's what we're going to do in examples now. First one, there has three productions of a lot of alternatives here, and yeah, this is already looking quite complicated. And what we can also say for that thing is that it is not LLK for any k. Why is that? Well, that has to do with the recursiveness of the formulations over here. So that in the way that it is presented here, it is not an LLK grammar for any k at all. So, how about LRK? Is that an LRK of any k? In order to decide that, we need to focus on all the possible rightmost derivations. So we need to enumerate all of them by keeping a marker on the last performed derivation step. So what is possible to derive? Well, for example, A you can derive, B you can derive. You can derive small a, large a, small b. You can derive 0 and a lot of different derivations. Here you see an enumeration of those with already a few free variables in order to keep the representation compact. So here the n can be an arbitrary number starting by 0, which would give you the right derivation from s to a to a b. Okay? So this is just enumerating all possible right derivations that there are and grouping them into a class of syntax forms that can be summarized with these free variables. Also, I have underlined the last derivation that has been performed in that, and I have omitted the omega part because, well, at first we are interested in k is 0 before we start looking at k is 1. Thus, I didn't list them at all because that would be just distracting. So what we need to do now in order to check whether that is okay for LR0 is to find or to fix a syntax form, for example this one here, and check whether we can find another syntax form that has the same alpha beta part. And well, no, it's just not the case. This B also has no counterpart in that. This thing over here, well, the fourth example here starts in the same way. It also has an a the power of n and another a, but then continues with b, so it's different from that thing over here. And yeah, concentrating on the fourth one gives us the same, so that's also okay. This one over here differs from this one over here by 0, for example, and also from this one by the A, and from this one by the A, and so forth. So there's just no evidence that this there would be a counterexample. And if you have an exhaustive listing of all the possible syntax forms, then you can say, well, that's me done, and I don't need to increase my look-ahead window and can claim this is LR0. Okay, so maybe another example, a little bit of a smaller grammar, now with a list production over here, which is now clearly not LLK because, well, that is just right recursive, left recursive. Now, is that LR with any K? First of all, LLK, no, it isn't. Then let's list all the possible syntax forms. So, yeah, is that the thing? Yeah, I've started for k is 0 once again. So I have not listed any w content so far. There is, of course, in these syntax forms there is w's, and this is actually where the whole thing here differs in, for example, the second and the third derivation. There could be arbitrarily many b's following because this is the list production for b. But since we start with a look-ahead window of 0, we just throw them away. So with that, we get these kinds of syntax forms, and, well, none of them do have a real conflict in the sense that there's no syntax matching. There's no other string that looks like smaller case a, b. There's nothing that looks like small case a, b, b, and this one's also unique. So there's no conflict in those. Pretty boring. No conflicts. So let's see what this thing does. So another grammar. And, yeah, let's have a look at the syntax forms. So here we now start with tracking a little bit of the remaining input. And, this is what I denote with this. Y, and well, let's list them. So this is the right derivations that are possible. Once again, the beta part is the underlined part. Whatever comes after beta is matched with the W, and whatever comes in front of beta is the alpha. What we need to fix now is alpha beta for all the derivations that are possible. For example, this a b to the power of 2n b, and compare it to other derivations that are possible. And pretty quickly we see that in this example over here, if we don't take any components of v into account, w into account, we see that the first derivation, alpha beta, already intersect with the second derivation's alpha beta part. So that is a situation without looking at what comes further in the input. We can't disambiguate anymore between these two derivations, thus not looking at any look-ahead symbols in order to decide won't give us the chance to parse this grammar. So LR0, it is not for sure. Does it help to take the first look-ahead window into account? Maybe. Let's check. So we would match the one next symbol from the input, which would be a C here, and we could now extend the window of characters that we look at of the second example by one, because that is this condition of length of AB plus number of look-ahead symbols, and turns out, well, here we get our beneficial situation. The next symbol actually decides whether I am in the derivation tree of the left derivation or in the derivation tree of the right derivation. So a C tells us we have to reduce, a B tells us we have to shift. And that is the crucial thing about this definition that you have to understand. You isolate the last derivation step in your derivation tree, fix that, compare what you have as prefix and the last right hand side with any other derivation. If there's an intersection, you have to enlarge your look ahead window until you are able to disambiguate between those. So we know, in principle, we would have to continue on comparing the things, but we won't hit any other string matchings anymore. So, and look-ahead window of one suffices in our case. So, what happens if we put the recursive element in the middle now? You can consider, for example, rightmost derivations of the following form, like this one over here. So note that I have made the effort of enumerating all possible right derivations, but just one. And that's for a good reason, because you can use that syntax form and, for example, create another one that yields A, bn plus 1, bn plus 1, which would also be a valid derivation. But that one would look the same if we cut away everything but the first a plus alpha plus beta plus k symbols as the solution from above, and we would need to decide on which of of these two derivations we consider ourselves to be in by looking at the next k symbols. However, you see that k needs to be beforehand fixed amount of things. But here I can derive arbitrarily many b's over here. So I will always be able to exceed my look-ahead window no matter how large I fix it. Since it needs to be fixed, it can be polluted and thus it doesn't provide us with any hint anymore. So this means there is no fixed k that we can use in order to parse every input of that would be appropriate for that grammar. It's a little bit like the pumping lemma, if you consider it like that. So, was that clear? Yeah? Note that in the literature, if you, for example, have this Wilhelm Maurer Seidelbuch, then there is, depending on the edition that you have obtained, there is an error in the definition of LRK grammars, and particularly this an error that that makes this procedure look like completely unrelated. So, the old edition is wrong. There is a new edition. I don't know whether it has already hit the shelves in the shops and in the library, but there will be an edition that will take this definition instead of the old one. So there has been an error in there. Maybe also in scripts that you have obtained from the Fachschaft. I don't know whether they offer something like that. Is there something like that? No? Wow. Super, because last year's lecture, I think, still had the bug in there. Okay. But we found it during the course, so one thing to be proud of. Anyway, with that now, we proceed to actual LR1 parsing with the idea of making use of a look-ahead window of a fixed size in order to fiddle out the conflicts that arise in the canonical automaton. In order to do so, what we need to provide is, instead of a standard LR0 item for the LR0 canonical automaton, we now move on to an LR1 item, which means that the items are now not purely grammar productions with a marker in there, but also carry look-ahead symbols with them, which correspond to the right context of whatever I have come from deriving. So, this X is taken from follow one, which is the right context. Whatever can is legally appearing to the right of B in our grammar, going any derivation. With that, we can now refine our notion of an admissible item for a certain pushdown content to an admissible LR1 item. And such an item consisting of this B going to alpha marker beta, meaning that we consider ourselves to have derivated explored the derivation tree up until here having X as right context of wherever B has been found in. So if the B has been on the right-hand side of this production AM1, then continuing with whatever this production has as a right context will at one point lead to X in the yield. So this means that X is incorporated into the item that is admissible for that pushdown content. Thus, what we do is we now modify our idea of the characteristic automaton for LR parsing by augmenting the start state with an end of input stream symbol as its right context, because, well, the start symbol is supposed to exist as the global goal, and afterwards there's nothing else to parse. So end of file is the only write context that's valid for the start state. So final states are states with completed items like that. Very nice. Okay, so how do transitions look like? Transitions work like in the shift case. If the item is in front of a non-terminal or terminal, we consume said thing and move the bullet one to the right, shift it, so to say, and the right context does is just taken from the original item. We have not left the level of right hand side in this transition, so there's no need to do anything about the right context of the currently considered transition. So this just remains the same. The magic happens now if you look at what happens when we do the descent into an expansion. So there's also a transition in case that we find the marker in front of a non-terminal. There we don't consume anything, but instead we expand and try to match with the rest of the input. But now, taking the old write context as a new write context wouldn't work anymore, because we expanded B and B had better following. So X is not the direct write context. Instead, better is still coming before we reach X eventually. So what we do is we put a new write context on the newly initialized item, which we compute by looking at the first one of the write context of what we have unfolded at that point. So the first one of beta, one concatenated with the old write context, which we can directly take out of there. So this is just a straightforward way of trying to remember the symbols to the right, which we use to reach a certain derivation tree level. Okay. So with that, we can perform a similar construction as we have done in the LR0 variant, with the non-deterministic automaton, and then performing the reduction to a deterministic automaton. But we can also just try to do that directly, as we have done for the LR0 automaton as well. So what that means is that we need a way of doing all the expansions in one go. That's what the epsilon closure function does for us. So this one over here, this works by taking productions from the Oh, sorry, that was not the one that I wanted. So it takes productions from the so far gathered list of LR1 items that it is provided with through the queue, and tries to spot markers in front of non-terminals, because these are the ones that create the epsilon transitions usually, and determines the whatever can be derived from that, particularly tracks whatever can be derived from that as the very first non-terminal, because this is what we need to add to the state in form of initial initial items, while tracking whatever is produced as a write context of these things. And that is now taken into the first computation, which is then concatenated to the old write context, and put as new write context into the item. This sounds quite complicated if you get presented like that, particularly if you get presented quite quickly. So let's have a look at how the construction actually works in the example that we have set up last time. So this is then the complete construction, that's but there's no surprises in there. It's just defining the start state as the epsilon closure of the usual start state, final states as we had them before, with closed items as the marker for a final state, and transitions are being done by as well epsilon closures of consumed of states that you reach by consuming a certain item, meaning moving the marker one to the right over the just consumed symbol. So this is no black art. That's the same way as the LR0 automaton was defined. So I've given you here the automaton that we also had last time for the LR0 automaton, but now I've added room for the right context that is necessary for LR1 automata there. So you see the brackets, there we can collect write context symbols. And I assume that the epsilon closure of the pure items is already done. The only thing that it remains to do now is to carry on with the right context propagation through the whole thing. So, because that has not been done yet, and that is the key difference to the LR0 automaton. So, you see me always. This is this Q0, the start state, and you see that I always have pink elements in there that should tell you about the cause why the next step evolves from this state at the moment. So we start with initializing the initial item S prime goes to root symbol with the end of input stream designator, this epsilon or dollar or whatever you might want to use. And we need to propagate that via epsilon closure. So what that means is that in case that I have a marker in front of an E, I will touch the or modify the right context lists of these things and add new symbols to that, depending on the right context of the symbol from which I come. So you see that this E is marked in pink, and thus what I will plan to do is I will fill in the right context for the productions that have expanded from E. What do I need to put into these right context brackets? Well, the right context from which we were coming, meaning the right context of this marked E here. You also notice that there is no other symbol following the E because it is the only symbol there. So the only thing that I can take as right context now is found in the brackets. So the right context for these unfolded E things will actually be end of input stream. So that's what I fill in there. You see, epsilon has been transferred into that also. So the algorithm is not done yet. We have to recursively continue gathering right contexts. So you see, I have marked that I now deal with this E plus thing here. This is another occurrence of a marked E, but this time it has a different right context than before. Particularly, it has the plus as right context. That's the difference to the case before. In the case before, we only we didn't have anything. Thus, we took the look-ahead set. So here we see that E also occurs with plus as its right context. So I need to add plus to all the expanded versions of E, meaning those newly added productions. So, next marker that I have to take care of is the marker in front of the T. This is in the same situation as it has been for E. There is no direct symbol following the T. So, what I will take as my right context is whatever I find in the brackets and transfer it to the productions for T. There, I could see I can take care of another marked T. But what happens if I noted them in the other direction and I didn't choose T, but instead F as my first thing to continue? That, because with T will lead to other things being added to the thing. But what would happen if I had take an F, for example, then F's right context windows would be set to epsilon and plus, because that is what is the right context of the thing over here. And now, having said that, I would try to work on this marked T, which would lead to my sets over there being extended. And still, the other would have epsilon and plus in there. You see that if you change or swap around the direction in which you add these right contexts, you might have to re-evaluate certain of these, particularly all the marked symbols for which you have found out that there have been additional right contexts. You have to re-evaluate. So in this case, you have to reconsider this F because it had its right context changed. So only then you will come to the conclusion that the right context for F is not sufficiently filled out right now. It needs to be extended by the multiplication, because that is what has been added to the set before. And yeah, this will lead you to the same result as the other thing. The only thing that you have to pay attention to is, please check whether we have to reevaluate such a propagation of right contexts, particularly when your your own write context set has been altered. So, yeah. You can do that over and over again, but at one point you will reach a fixed point where nothing changes anymore, and that is the that is when you have exhausted the search for all the write contexts, and you can continue with adding write contexts to the other states of the automaton. So what is there that you can do? Well, you have to go through transitions, and this is a particularly easy job because all you have to do is, for example, if you go a T, you take all the items that have the T with a marker in front of them and simply copy the write context symbols into the new state. So that's what happens, for example, for this T thing over here. I just take all the items that have a marked T, shift the marker by one, and copy the symbols. And I've done so with a lot of those because it's a large diagram, and we will never finish if I don't take any shortcuts. So this provides us with, for example, here, a completely done state, but there's also other states for where I still have to do work, particularly fill in the right contexts following the same principles as below, and well, this will lead to a lot of other right contexts to be constructed, and yeah, this also leads to a thing which is a little bit problematic, maybe. Particularly, you can't simply always say that all the transitions that have been present in the old LR0 automaton will be still valid in the new LR1 automaton. Particularly, if you have several input edges from different states. Why is that? That is because although you still have in common the same item part of an LR1 item, through propagation and epsilon closure, you might end up with different write contexts. For example, in this case over here, in the case of Q5 and Q2, in the LR0 automaton, this was a valid transition. In this one over here, this would be a valid transition if there was a marker before T, and T has the right context of closing bracket and addition, and well, going T would mean that we would have to reach an automaton that had the same item like this, just with the marker shifted one to the right. Turns out, well, the item part is still there, but the right context is different now. So the former valid transition is not valid anymore. Instead, there's new states that pop up in the LR1 automaton. And although this looks a little bit tedious, this is exactly what we wanted to have, because otherwise we wouldn't get more expressivity in, except for maybe a few more disambiguations done solely by the write contexts. And the full LR1 automaton construction enables us to get an even larger automaton, which helps us in disambiguating states a lot more, and thus giving us more unique advice. So this continues on and on and on, and at that point I want to cut off. There are still a few other states that might be constructed, but you get the gist of it. So you have to propagate the right contexts, and you have to maybe alter the structure of the automaton, because it doesn't, it is not the same as the LR0 automaton, at least not always. There are instances where they are still have the same shape, but that is not necessarily the case. So recycling of automata is not an option for this case here. So, all in all, you see that the LR1 automaton compared to the LR0 automaton creates a lot more states. And this is due to the look ahead, the right context things. And turns out that the amount of states that are added to the automaton is directly related to the number of look-ahead symbols that you consider, and is even exponential in the number of look-ahead symbols. So while an LR1 automaton still seems feasible, LR2, LR3, LR4 grow much, much larger, and at one point will probably explode your memory. So yeah, that's it. That's that. Did that actually help? Well, turns out that if you inspect the states that you have produced now, there's this, for example, this Q9, which had been a conflicting state before, now looks a little bit different than before. It now has these right context symbols. And, well, let's check how that could help. Here we have a shift-reduce conflict. The marker is at the end of the item and in the middle of the other item. So we need to decide whether to shift the star or to reduce. And what we can do is now we can now have a look at what follows to the right in the input and determine whether it is a star or whether it is anything that comes from the right context of the completed item. So that's what we do. We compare the right context of the completed item to the first one of whatever comes to the right of the marker in the other production, as well as the right context, because this thing might be empty, for example. So we need to concatenate that with the right context. And turns out that this boils down to being just the symbol, because this is already a terminal, which means that we are comparing end of input stream, addition operator, and multiplication operator, and there's no overlap. So depending on whatever we find in the input, we can decide whether we consider ourselves to be in reduction state or shift state. And turns out that for the other conflicting states, Q1 and Q2, they can be resolved in a similar way, leaving our automaton without any conflicting state anymore. This gives us a capable parser that can parse the basic grammar. And this now leads to an addition of the model of the parser in the following way. We have a pushdown for our management of our internal canonical automaton's state. We have an input window with a look-ahead window in the input. Then we have internally in the automaton the action table, which is the go-to table, which is the table that determines how the canonical LR1 automaton does its transfers from state one, I to J, and the action table that tells us about what action we have to take in case we see input symbol W in the look ahead. We can construct the LR1 parser in a similar way as we could do for the LR0 parser. There's the shift transitions that are performed when how's it read? Yeah. So, top of the stack or push down, we find the canonical automaton's state P. And we now consider the action table of how to interpret that state. And action table then checks for the look ahead window, which is W, and tells us, well, in our case, we have to perform a shift, and a shift means that the action that I'm going to do is I will look up the state that the canonical automaton will reach when reading symbol A from the input, and that's the state that I would push onto my pushdown. Reduce actions are found if the topmost state found on the pushdown automaton contains a closed item, and the action table tells us that under the current look ahead W, I need to perform a reduction with that production. Then what I will do is I will remove the topmost number of elements from the pushdown, depending on the length of the right-hand side of the production, and replace it with whatever state is reachable in the canonical automaton under shifting of the right-hand, left-hand side symbol of the reductions production. And finish, well, is just that whenever the initial production in a completed item is found in the current state on the top of the parser, and the input is just not relevant in that case. So that gives us the LR1 parser. Yeah, and in our example, this is for what the action table looks like. So for each of the states, we have advice depending on the current symbol in the look ahead, and this looks this can be read as, well, either there is an S that tells us we need to shift, or there is a combination an alternative of a production mentioned that is meant to be taken as reduction here. So an entry of E, 1 means that we have to reduce with E's first alternative being E goes to T. So that is how you read the action table of that thing. Of course, there's also a notion of reduce-reduce conflicts and shift-reduce conflicts in that setting, whenever the look-ahead of one also is not suitable for resolving conflicts, and we can even extend that to look-ahead of length K. This is pretty similar as the definition for LR0 conflicts, except that now we also take the right context into account. So it's just a lifting of the unsuited characteristics of a certain state to LRK states. However, there are still rooms for working with automata even in presence of conflicts. And that is a thing that is given by many practical parser generators. For example, you might remember the grammar that you see over here is meant to be the exact same grammar as the one that we had before, arithmetic expressions, but this one would be ambiguous. So for sure, offering several deduction trees, then several deduction trees for the same input. Thus, for sure, there will be conflicts in the LR1 automaton's states. So, actually, there are. So, there is a shift-reduced conflict in some state 8 that looks like this one over here. So, there's a closed item E plus E and a non-completed item E marker plus E. And, yeah, well, this is telling us about, well, the parser state that is sketched a little bit below, this one over here, where we have E plus E on the push down and another plus in the input. This is a thing that you just can't decide in with purely the rules of the grammar over here. You could either put stress on binding the sum early on or later on, and it's just not specified by this grammar over here. But you can help out by pointing out the associativity of the operator plus, for example. So if you tell the system that the associativity is to the left, then it will try to group these expressions of priority to the left. If you tell it it has associativity right, then it will group them more to the right. And this is realized by if you tell the system that plus is left associative, for example, then what the system will do is it will fill in the gap in the action table with, well, reduce, please, in that situation. Same is there's a similar situation for the multiplication. And just for shits and giggles, we will fill it out as being right associative, which means that I will have to shift in the situation, which will fill in shift in the action table. And then there's the kind of final, shift reduce conflict in this grammar that is, yeah, you have situations like these, or these during parsing, where you have an expression times expression and a plus in the input, and an expression plus an expression and a times in the input. You, as a human being, of course, know what was meant here. You would like to prefer the multiplication to the addition, because that's how arithmetic works. And the grammar in this case doesn't provide you with any such information, so you have to patch that in yourself. There's this idea of precedence that you can give to certain operators in your system. So what you can do is you say that multiplication has higher precedence and plus has lower precedence, which will lead the system to fill in the gaps here with the entries that will lead to multiplication being preferred to addition. So you see, with these precedences and associativity, you even have a chance of providing a parser for cases where which are actually highly ambiguous and wouldn't be parsable in any other way with that grammar, at least. Yes, I think we have reached the point in time.